welcome everyone. Today we're going to talk to Vikram, who I think I met in the mid 90s, and then I think again we're talking now. I think after a gap of about 20 years, I guess, right, Vikram?
Yeah, and it's about 20. Yeah.
I was looking at. I keep spying on people on LinkedIn to see what they are doing, to see if there's some kind of an overlap between what I want to learn, right? And whether they have those skill sets. And Vikram seemed to be like the perfect match of someone who is in the data space, which is also the space that I'm in, and I would like to learn more, right? And so I was like, okay, Vikram, let's get a conversation going on this. So Vikram was kind enough to oblige. So welcome, Vikram.
Thank you so much, Agnil, and I've got it. And part of the reason is I'm also here to learn. So you like really specialized in the analytics side, and you kind of stayed true to the field. So you'll have as much to tell me about it as I have to tell you. So
yeah, hopefully I'll try. So Vikram, let's start with this, right? Let's start with this. Let me learn a little bit about yourself. Who you are, right, and where you are today, what you do, just an overall of who Vikram the person is.
Sure. So since you said Vikram the person, let me start with the non-professional side, because I think that's more important, A, and B, that tends to get lost a little bit when you're an entrepreneur. You only think about work. So a little bit about my personal side. My wife Shreya and I live in Bangalore with our two cats, Momo and Yuki. We've just gotten into running of late, so we really enjoy. I mean, it's not like the long distance runners, but we just enjoy 2-3 runs a week. And we're both like crazy foodies. We love Asian cuisine. We love exploring new places. So I mean, on the personal side, you know, just nothing but love and joy and lots to be thankful for. On the professional side, I'm an entrepreneur, basically. Like if I had to describe myself in one word, it would be entrepreneur, right? So basically, a little bit about how I started. I did my BTech in information technology from a college called NITK in Surat. So after that, I mean, we were back then, there were like, you know, still like web 1.5 or web 2.0. There weren't all these kind of learning platforms. You couldn't really prepare for companies coming in. It was all like shooting in the dark, you know. So now when I see, like when I went back to college and I see like people there, I'm like, gosh, what was I doing in college? These guys are so exposed and plugged into the world, you know. I feel like such a fool when I went there. So anyway, after college, I joined this company called Amdocs, and I worked in Java development for a year and a half. And, you know, when I left college, I had this thing, I love Java development, this, that. But when I worked in a corporate IT setup for like a year, I swore to God I would never get back there, right? It was just like soul sucking. I tried to get out after 3 months, but the problem is the recession had hit at that point. So I had gotten a couple of offers that got rescinded at the last moment and all that stuff. But I had figured out pretty early on that I like somehow just code was not it for me, right? Somehow this combination of business plus decision making plus statistics, like that combination appealed to me a lot more. And I didn't even know there was a thing called analytics till I actually went for an interview, and like it was for analytics, but I didn't know what it was. And then the guy told me, you know what, dude, you suck at this right now, but you had a couple of pretty interesting ideas, and I'd love to see, you know, where you can take this. So spend the next 2 months really studying. And this was for HP, okay? Spend the next 2 months studying and like learn everything you can, and let's do another interview in 2 months, right? So I just like, I was in love. Like I just spent day and night learning statistics and this and that. And so then you marry that with the programming part, and it's a lot of fun, right? So so then I had that second interview and I made it through, and they were like, okay, we're good. Like, let's go ahead. And then the recession hit and everyone put a hiring freeze. So before things could come through, basically like it was, dead on arrival. But then I decided, you know what, enough is enough. Let me just quit. So this was in Pune, Amdocs. So let me just quit and come back to Bangalore, and then I'll find something. I was reasonably confident. So I joined this startup called Redwood Associates, and they have a sister concern called Analytics Training Institute. So it is this couple of really cool guys they were at Marketix back in the day, right? When Marketix sold out to WNS, a lot of that marketing's mafia went out and started their own companies, and a lot of which are very famous now, right? So these guys, I mean, they loved analytics, and you know, they were okay to let you experiment and like run with your own ideas. So I did a lot of consulting, training, even a little bit of product development there, and it was amazing. But at that point, I kind of, by about a year, so I'm guessing this year and a half is becoming a theme now. So by about a year and a half, I started feeling that itch again, and like I didn't know what the next step would be, right? But I felt like I want to do something on my own. Maybe I'm not like 100% sure about whether it would work or not, but I feel like I need to explore on my own. And that's how my entrepreneurship journey began. Like I think it was 2010 end or something. Yeah. So since then I've been doing a whole bunch of things, right? Like I started doing analytics consulting. In between, I tried building a skilling platform for analytics. In 2015, I worked on a really, really, I think that's the company that I started that was closest to actually hitting it out of the park, right? So this was a company called Wypress Pay, and the idea was to introduce this tap and pay system for at concerts, right? Now it's commonplace. You get these NFC wristbands and you just go recharge it once and you tap and pay at all these concerts. But in 2015, it was a pretty new concept. And like I had an in with the customer, and you know, it is all there, but the person who was funding this ran out of money at the last moment. And you know, so we had actually done like an implementation at one huge concert in the VIP lounge, and it ran flawlessly, like 0% failures, complete reconciliation. So all the value proposition that we had peddled, right, they just materialized, right? It was beautiful. But I mean, there's a difference between the product working and the business working. And on the side, weirdly enough, I had also been hosting, like through a very random sequence of events, I'd been hosting a spelling bee on TV, right? And I still host it actually. So so it was for this TV channel in Hyderabad. And there's a lot of students who take part in it every year, like 20,000, 25,000 students, right? And I had built this personal brand with them over the years, and like they really trusted me because I would never, ever, ever, you know, cut a corner or cheat or anything. So I felt like, okay, these people are all learning out of books. They don't know what words they're spelling. They don't know how to pronounce them. They don't know how to use them. And there should be a more tech-enabled, fun way of learning, you know, where like it kind of levels the playing field a little bit and helps them like improve. So I actually built a product to enable, it was like a vocabulary bootcamp for them. But I mean, it was too niche a product, and this is where I learned the importance of distribution, right? So the TV channel didn't want to take a risk and like make it the official learning material of the spelling bee. And that basically meant I had to go peddle it on my own. And then that became like a whole different ballgame. And I wasn't equipped to do that. So that didn't work out. But then it led to kind of a moment of reckoning. And so then I was like, okay, you know what, just stop second guessing yourself, stop running all around the place, figure out what you're actually good at and like get working on it, right? So then I asked myself, what do I see myself working on for the next 10 years, right? And one of them was a project that had been like dear to my heart. I mean, it's been at least 7-8 years since I've had the idea, worked on it a little bit, developed it, and now the ecosystem and the Python libraries and all have come up to speed, and now I can do it with a much smaller team. Like back in the day, you had to have funds and resources to make this happen. So that's how the Fluid Alpha venture came about. So basically it's using machine learning for quantitative trading, and it's like a hedge fund as a service, right? What you're trying to do is bring the power of a hedge fund, a quant hedge fund, to the average Joe. And it's a product business, obviously, and product businesses are really, really hard to run. So I wanted to make sure that there would, and I wasn't in a position to raise money from investors, because for that, I mean, you need some either stellar track record or a previous you know, history of exits and so on, which I didn't have. So I knew I would have to fund it on my own. And I mean, I did have like a business partner slash mentor who supported me a lot, but this kind of product requires a lot of money and a lot of people, right? So because at the end of the day, you're dealing with people's money, so you have to be damn sure that you can't like iterate your way to profitability. Like, people are going to lose confidence and trust in you by that time, right? So I knew it would have to be a service business that kind of funded this. And the service business, I wanted it to be like bringing together everything that I felt I was reasonably good at. And data storytelling was that venture, right? So combining data analysis, communication, design, neuroscience, communication structure, that kind of stuff. So bring it all together under one roof. And that's what 10x Datacom is. So it's basically these two ventures right now, but the path to these two has been extremely circuitous. So that's pretty much where I am and how I got here.
So your journey is so fascinating, Vikram. I'm thinking of so different questions that I have based on what you're saying. I think we should do another conversation because.
No, I'd love to. I mean, like, we can wing it, no problem.
Yeah, because I always have this question of how do entrepreneurs, survive when they're building a product, right? Because see, now I have a stable, I hopefully have a stable job. So I have this paycheck that's coming in every month, and I know that I can pay my bills with it, right? But correct. In your case, I think it takes a lot of guts to say that I'm okay with not getting a paycheck for the next 12 to 18 months. And I, at some point, I want to listen to we should do another conversation on this to listen to your thinking. What goes on in your mind, right? What makes you take that decision and all of that?
I could just tell you a little bit about it right now.
Yes.
Truth be told, the way I think about it right now is totally different from the way I thought about it back in the day, right? Maybe up till like 2 years back. Up till 2 years back, it was more like I would throw caution to the wind and just go into it. And I knew I had the ability to dog it out. Okay, like that much I knew. Mm-hmm. I knew I could like survive on next to nothing because I had established that I could survive on nothing over the years, right? So I knew that if push comes to shove and it comes to like really cutting down to almost zero, I would do it. And that's the truth. Like I have done that a lot in my career. And it's not ideal because there's no joy in like suffering, right? It is hard. But over the last couple of years, 2-3 years, I feel my thinking on this has changed, right? Like one of the reasons was definitely like Shreya coming into my life. And like you start thinking about things a little differently at that point. At the same time, you also realize, man, it needs to be fun also. Like you can't just subject yourself to suffering for whatever sake, right? In this Medium blog that I told you about, like one of the things was very clearly audit your resources, right? Like understand what it takes, not just to start, but to finish. And then multiply that by 3, okay? Because that's how much it's going to take. It's going to take 3 times the amount of money, 3 times the amount of time, and possibly 3 times the amount of people that you think you need when you start. Right. And if you don't have everything that you need, that's fine. But at least have a plan in place for getting what you need. Right. Understand that, hey, I have like 5 lakhs in my account right now. If I really reduce my expenses a lot, that could be about 8 months of survival at minimal costs. But I'm going to probably need 16 to 18 months to build this product and get to product market fit. So how am I going to live those other 10 months, right? Is it going to be that I ask for funding when I have an MVP in place? Is it going to be that we start a services venture based on what we're awesome at just to pay the bills? Like, what is that plan, right? You need to have that plan. And which is why 10x Datacom even came into existence, because it's like, you have to have fun. Like, it's okay if the product takes a little long. Okay, see. There are some products which are very time sensitive, right? Like today, if you try to build a UPI app, you're going to get nowhere. But if you want to build it 5 years back, you had to run like the wind because speed is everything in those markets, right? But what I'm building is like, for example, stock market investing is not going anywhere, okay? if you can make money even 5 years down the line, you're going to make a lot of money for yourself, like if you can help others make money. So what's the big hurry to get to that point, right? Even if it takes a year extra, that's totally fine, but at least have fun along the way and like don't subject yourself to suffering. So that was kind of the thinking behind it now. So whatever it is, just have a plan in place and know that if you think it's going to take X, actually it's going to take 3X. Like that's how I would plan for it.
So it's so interesting. Okay. So I want to do another, I'm just taking a few notes here. So sure. I want to do a conversation with you in the next couple of months, Vikram, on the mindset of entrepreneurship, because like you're what you know, someone like me would call a serial entrepreneur, right? So
yes,
you're just going from one startup to another, right? So
which is what company. I want to stop also, I hope. For the next 10 years I have only two ventures, Fluid Alpha and 10x Datacom, and I don't want a third venture outside of this, and I don't want to shift either. Like I'm done being single. I just want these two to last.
So I think that was one conversation, and part of that same conversation I want to talk to you about. So one is the mindset, right? The other is the process also, like how do you come up with the idea, how do you build an MVP, right? How do you go for funding, right? So all of that, so we should talk about this someday, Vikram. It's very, very, very interesting, thing. So, let's do this. Okay. So, but I think this one, I wanted to talk to you about data, right? But it's fascinating that you seem like a wealth of knowledge, Vikram, but this one, let's stick to data and then we should do a couple of other
conversations. Definitely.
So,
happy to.
So how would you describe yourself, Vikram? Data scientist, data visualizer, a data guy, an analytics dude. I mean, just, you know, like, I know you said entrepreneur at the start, but is from a data standpoint, how would you describe yourself and why?
Okay. Let's put it this way, right? Out of those three things that you mentioned, it's data viz, machine learning, that's data science, and then analytics. Out of those three, I would say, data viz and BI is kind of where I would say I'm pretty world-class, right? Now, on the data science and the analytics side, honestly, I have not dived deep enough to say that I'm world-class at it. I'm good at it, but not world-class, right? So I'm more of a visualizer than I am the other two things. But that being said, I look at these three things as more of a skill set to me particularly, since see, I think it all comes down to identity, right? Like, for example, some people are data scientists and that's their core professional identity. For me, my core professional identity is entrepreneur, right? So my job is to solve certain problems that I'm passionate about, that the market has scope to accept and like enjoy and pay for, right? Now, these are skill sets that help me solve those problems, right? And it's also not just a skill set, it's also a way of thinking about things. Like it entails a certain amount of rigor. Like you have to bring probability and variability into it. You have to structure your problem well. You have to really cover all your bases with great data. So, and on the data viz side, it's just a way for me to express myself and communicate better, right? So at the end, it's like, these are amazing skill sets to have to solve problems, right? But I don't think any of them is like my core identity. So, I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does. I mean, you don't have to bucket yourself as one, right? So good. Okay, so let me ask you this then, Vikram, right? Mm-hmm. So you've been in the space, it looks like, from around 12 to 14-ish years, right? Give or take.
Yeah, perfect. That's exactly.
And, just like everything else, you touched upon, Web 1.5, we are at Web 3 now, right? So at least we hope we are at Web 3, but I don't know, I'm not seeing. Okay, no, I don't want to get into that debate, how have you seen the field you're in? How have you seen that evolve, Vikram?
So I think I can touch upon it because I have experience on consulting, training, and product. like I've seen differences in all these three areas, right? Like back in the day, there were maybe three, four domains in which analytics was a stable offering, right? Like the consumers of that offering knew what they wanted and they knew what ROI they were expecting from it. So I would say one of the areas was definitely credit scoring. One area was in the pharma and healthcare space. Another area was definitely on the marketing side, where you had marketing mix modeling and like survey analytics and stuff like that. So these are areas where like 100% people were sure about what they wanted, and they were at kind of the bleeding edge of the analytics space, right? But on the other side, at the same time, you had people who were saying, hey, just give me some charts. I want to put it in my presentation so my manager think I'm using analytics, right?
Data-driven. I show that I can prove I'm data-driven. Okay.
Yeah. Like so for them, a fancy looking chart with some jargon like R and P value, which he doesn't understand and his manager also doesn't understand, that was the thing of I'm using analytics. Like I just need to show them that I'm somehow using analytics, right? I think a lot of people fell into that space, and the mindset was more like, hey, there is this thing happening. We don't understand it, but I feel we need to participate somehow, right? So that's how the attitude was back then. But now that's changed a lot, right? And it showed even in the consulting, in the training offerings. Like back then, like you could throw anything you wanted in a PPT and like talk to people about it and they would accept it as analytics training, right? But now if you look at it, everyone's only talking ROI and value, right? Mm-hmm. We want to solve business problems. Analytics has to serve business. Analytics has to serve people at the point of making a decision in their context, right? Mm-hmm. Your decision-making process should not change on account of the analytics process. It's vice versa. Like the analytics process has to feed into business, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel people have gotten really good at making analytics accountable, right? You can't just... like in every, like you'd see HR, right? Like HR analytics, like the Google people team did some great work 10, 15 years back. And now those practices are propagated all over the place. And people are very, very certain about like what kinds of analytics they do. How do they check out surveys? How do they understand like softer aspects like, you know, employee satisfaction and like churn and stuff like that. So right from HR to marketing to finance to across different industries and verticals, like you have specialized solutions coming up and specialized products to serve these people. So I think it's gotten a lot more commoditized, and hence it's become a lot, it's permeated a lot more. Like you can have people in small companies also using it now.
Interesting.
So, another thing, I guess, like the fact that now they're able to embed it into everyday products, right? Like for example, in Google Analytics, you have these auto highlights that come up where a lot of summaries happen on the spot, right? Before you need a marketing consultant to sit with you and make sense of all those things. So now that analytics has become more consumable by the business user.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Where do you see it going in the future? So what does the next step in analytics look like to you?
I would say, there's whenever something stabilizes in analytics, some new thing always comes that kind of gets people excited, right? Like, for example, when this whole statistics part kind of settled down and became more mainstream, then machine learning came and everyone started talking about these algorithms. When that happened, then deep learning came. Given that the world is moving towards bigger and better models, see, one thing that's happening is you have things like GPT-3 and ResNets and all these different things that are coming from all these Facebook research divisions and Google research divisions, where it's literally supercomputing power required to build a model, but anybody can use the model, right? So in a sense, like that superpower is kind of being democratized in a very big way. So that's one thing that's happening, right? More and more, like for example, I have a college mate who's building a company that auto-generates blog content, right? Using GPT-3. Like all you need to do is put in some keywords on what topics you want and like the SEO keywords, and it generates like long form articles, right? And this would have been impossible for a startup to do, right? But the thing is, GPT-3 exists from OpenAI. Or you have like all these object detection algorithms that are there in Google Cloud and Amazon Web Services and stuff. So all you need to do is kind of focus on the business problem. And there are amazing, like powerful things you can plug into your workflow and your product development process. So that's one thing for sure that's happening. Like the ability to do great analytics and like improve decisions is, it's now coming into every producer's hands. And on the consumer side, I feel like the people who consume analytics are now being like, it's becoming more and more digestible to them. Like it's mirroring their business process and their problem a lot more, with less jargon and less, you know, geek speak. So on the producer side and the consumer side, I think there's a lot of great changes happening, and it's going to only accelerate over the next 10 years.
So it's so interesting you say that, Vikram. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit. And at the start, I was saying that I was, you know, I keep like spying on LinkedIn, right? What are people doing and all of that. Correct. So I was, you know, I was looking at your LinkedIn profile, and here's something that I found, which I thought was interesting, and you should probably explain to us, right? Is so you said, so this, I'm quoting exactly what was on your profile. So ML-driven quant trading to consistently generate alpha across asset classes and instruments, right?
Correct.
So I want you to explain, so if you wouldn't mind, explain each of these terms, walk you through each term, and then explain all of them together, right? So like, you know, just explain it to a layman like me.
So when I say ML, I obviously like machine learning, and this is the data science part that you brought up, right? And the good thing about machine learning is that, see, it lets you kind of reduce your problem to a single metric or a goal, right? And then the idea of whatever algorithm you use is to optimize for that one goal. Like, for example, if you want to improve accuracy, then that accuracy metric will be improved through the learning process, right? So that's what a machine learning algorithm does, right? So all you're specifying is, what is the learning algorithm? And then the algorithm itself does the learning on your behalf to optimize this one goal or function. And you have a model output, like an equation at the end, right? And that equation is what you would then deploy in your software. And you would look for instances where like some particular event happened, and then you would score that event and like trade or not, right? The thing about ML is, everyone thinks it's like this magic black box. You just dump some data in and you get some magic out, right? But the whole point is, I feel the way you handle your data mirrors how you understand the problem, right? Like the kind of variables that you, everyone starts with the same set of like 20, 30 things, right? When you, like, what is there? Like, honestly, what is the input that's there in a stock market? You have prices, you have volume, you have some Fed coming and saying, I mean, increasing interest rates. You have prices of gold and silver. You have prices of wheat and pork and whatnot. So these are the same 20 inputs that everybody has, right? So how do you make your algorithm different or stand out? Like, it has to mirror your thought process, like how you think about the problem. So between your raw data and that model, there's a whole bunch of data wrangling and creating all these new variables that are meaningful, you know, these compound variables, whatever, like however you think about the problem, your data preparation process has to kind of mirror that. And you have to have certain hypotheses that you would like to test out, right? And that's the input then into your machine learning algorithm, which then gives you your output. So that's the ML part, right? Where you're trying to learn these patterns in the data through some learning algorithm automatically. And the main part you are focused on here is for the data to kind of represent your view of the problem, right? So the next thing we spoke about is quant, right?
Yes, quant trading,
So quant trading is basically, it's just saying that we're going to be systematic about the way we trade. We're going to apply some quantitative methods to our trading process. We're going to like test for statistical patterns. We're going to test for correlations. Basically, there is a layer of intelligence that you add to your trading. That's what quant trading is, right? So because there is this thing that has been doing the rounds of late, and that's a little more, it's gaining popularity. It's called algo trading, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people talk about it. And the thing about algo trading is, like, it's an incomplete picture of things, right? Like, you don't know why things are working. You don't know if they'll work in this particular instance. It's just like some rule that you come up with, and you supposedly run something called a back test, and then you're like, okay, I want to run this rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's no real, there is a level of testing, but I feel it's not the complete picture. Like, you don't really understand what are the drivers of that action, and can you repeatedly tap into something to generate profits, right? The why of it never comes from the traditional algo trading. It only comes from quant, where you understand statistically what is going on, right?
Interesting.
Then the next part is the alpha.
Alpha.
Alpha is just like profits, right? It's just saying the excess return that I can generate on top of something that the Nifty would give you anyways. Like, for example, if I say, hey, dude, I deliver 18% returns, you'd be like, okay, is that great compared to what? Like, if the Nifty delivered 20% and I delivered 18%, then that's just stupid, right?
Yes.
So alpha is what I would give on top of that. Like, for example, if the Nifty gave 18% and I gave 30%, that additional 12% is the alpha that I've generated on account of actively investing.
Interesting. Okay. And I think asset classes and instruments.
Asset classes and instruments are just like the vehicles for you to. So asset classes, like, where are you going to trade? An instrument is, how are you going to trade, right? So the where would be, is it like equity, commodities, currency, fixed income bonds, whatever that is, right? And on the instrument side, like, how do you participate in equity? You buy shares of a company, or you could also buy futures and options. How do you participate in commodities? You buy futures contracts. How do you invest in the index? You buy ETFs, right? So there are these multiple instruments through which you participate in different asset classes. So that's basically it. So in effect, if I were to bring the whole thing together, what I'm trying to say is there are a whole bunch of things you could invest in, right? We will bring that entire universe of investing to you by finding the best strategies that have been rigorously tested using statistics and that can predictably generate returns for you. Right? And it trades on your behalf. So there's nothing for you to do. All you need to do is input your goals, your capital, your constraints, your preferences, and let the algorithm do its thing. So it sits on top of your brokerage, your trading account, and it trades on your behalf and takes all your rules into account.
Interesting. And so I guess, can I use your app? So at least the way I'm thinking about it is, there is a brokerage account, and then you make your app sit as a layer on top of it, and then, you know, it does all the intelligent stuff for you. Are you talking worldwide markets? Are you specializing in any specific market or two markets? How would that work, Vikram?
So I'm starting with the Indian market, right? And specifically the National Stock Exchange, because, I mean, the data products are a little better and they're much more tech-enabled and they account for majority of the trading anyways. But see, the thing is, let's put it this way, right? The input data is the same across the world, right? Like, it's going to come in the same format, and it's about the same types of instruments and whatever, right? The machine learning algorithm is going to be the same across the world, right? But let's put it this way. What it learns from the data would be different in different geographies, right? Like, because people, see, at the end of the day, stock prices reflect people's behavior and the structure of certain markets. So you have different kinds of players. Now, in some places, you have a lot of manipulators. Like in India, you have a lot of these guys who are like front running and doing all kinds of nonsense. And then in more regulated markets, you have like a much more stable way of doing things. But different players interact with each other differently, and that shows up in the data somehow, right? So the patterns you would uncover in the US are very different from the patterns you would uncover in India. But the process of arriving at that final output would be the same, right? So your training process is going to, but the process is the same and the inputs are the same.
Interesting. Okay.
I mean, we're definitely going to be a global, at least on the, see, the first, I would say the first avatar of this company is going to be as an intelligence layer on top of your on top of your trading account, right? And in that perspective, you can absolutely be a global player, and that's fine. But maybe the next avatar after that would be in the form of a hedge fund, right? And in that case, then obviously you would be restricted to certain geographies. But on the intelligence side, I see no reason why we cannot be a global player.
Interesting. That's so, it's so interesting. So I generally think we should have a 20-minute conversation, but this has already been, I think, close to 40 minutes. It's been fascinating, Vikram. But I'm going to ask you the last question, but I want to do another, like I said, video or even an audio format with you on some of the other things that I have notes on. But the last question I have for you for this session, Vikram, is, so you've had a journey, you've learned some things, right? And correct. There are people who want to become data visualizers, or they want to become probably entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs in the data visualization space. Mm-hmm. So one, what is your advice for folks who want to get into this field? And part B of that question is, what kind of skill sets should they learn to be successful in this space, Vikram?
Correct. So, okay. So one thing is, from my own perspective, I can say in sometime late 2020, I had a moment of reckoning. Like I had reached this point where I had jumped, like I had tried too many different ventures and I had tried too many different like skill sets. And it was just like, I was sick and tired of just jumping. And I want to bring it all together and I want to move forward with confidence. So I felt the best way to do it would be, this is how my mind works, list out every mistake I've ever made and see what I can learn from it, right? So I sat and did a career postmortem and I listed out every mistake, and I actually ended up converting that into a 20-part Medium series, right? And that's now become my playbook for running a business. Like I make sure I fill out all the checklists and so on, so that I know that it's not just lessons learned, but lessons learned. Like the only time it becomes a lesson learned is when you've changed the way you do things to incorporate this lesson, right? It's not just sitting and listing down things in a notebook. So that's become like my operating playbook, so to say. And in terms of skill sets, I would say just go one level above what you're trying to solve, right? Like we tend to be very myopic about like, I want to become awesome at data visualization. Like, and then I'll think about like all these different courses and these different whatever, like just go one level above and get a bird's eye view of data visualization, right? Like who are the people who are most followed? Who are the people who are making beautiful stuff that you really like? Who are the people who are making the biggest impact, right? Just get that perspective, see the lay of the land, figure out which part of that resonates most with you, and then really dive into something, right? Like, so when it comes to data viz, there are people who specialize in EDA for machine learning. There are some people who specialize in data storytelling for like explanatory presentations or for sales pitches or for like fundraising, right? Then there are some people who specialize in dashboards. There's many different ways you could implement any skill set, right? And especially in analytics, there's 500 different ways of doing it, right? Because we've moved one level above algorithms to solutions. Like, for example, nobody cares so much about logistic regression as they do about credit risk modeling or attrition or whatever, right? So you have to understand like what are the solutions that people care about and focus on extending that algorithm into a solution, right? So I just feel like it's important to get perspective. It's important to get a lay of the land. It's possibly really nice to get a mentor also, like somebody who doesn't mind just talking to you to give you that little bit of perspective and support on your journey. And then it's just about like desire, I guess, because a lot of people do a lot of courses, but like, how do you, like, for example, if you're if you're a data analyst and you've learned statistics, right? Like, how are you going to jump into a statistics job? It's not that easy. Like, you would have to show some projects, or you would have to solve some real world problem. So yeah, I guess that analytics portfolio is also really important.
Interesting. Okay. So Vikram, that was the list of questions I had for today. And I want to emphasize today, because it was great talking to you. It was a fantastic conversation, and we should do at least another conversation, Vikram. So I know you're a very busy person, so I won't hold you up for too long, but I just want to say thanks a lot. I think this was great learning for me, and I hope everyone who's watching or listening is also at least has some takeaway in terms of learning from this conversation, Vikram. So I just want to say thanks a lot.
My pleasure being here, man. I do. It was really nice, because I don't think you really get to think about your career in its totality unless someone really asks you about it, right? so it's nice, but I would love to chat further also.
Yeah, because I really want to talk about this whole entrepreneurship thing, and you know, the process of product building, the process of, like, you know, what's your mindset behind it, and then, you know, how does a conversation with a VC or an angel investor look like, right? And you know, how do you think about such things, and what do they care about, right? Like, what's important to them, right? Yeah. So Vikram, I let you go. I just want to say thanks again, and I'm sure we'll speak soon.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much for having me.